Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
So, if Trump wins, what will unions do? In one word, strike. What some are planning. The battleground state of Florida, building strength with the food and commercial workers. And today on the show, the latest from the Ohio AFL-CIO and what the postal mail handlers are up against. Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday, November 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcasts, and you can follow us there on Twitter, at AWF Union Podcast. Two guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off in a few minutes with Timothy Berge. Tim is the president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, and what we're going to talk about? The election. This is probably one of the most important elections in America's history. You've heard that before, and I'll tell you, the last 4 years have been a challenge, especially for so many unions. Tim is going to talk about the planning, what they did to get ready for today, the differences from 4 years ago today. You'll recall Hillary Clinton was in the lead with many pollsters. Trump won it, and he won it with the Electoral College. Is that going to be the same kind of scenario this year? We will find out. Hopefully tomorrow, maybe not. The issues that are resonating with workers and voters. Recently, Tim was featured in a kind of a documentary on CNN talking about Joe Biden's path to the White House. And he told one of the political analysts that 4 years ago, many of our members, too many of them, voted for Trump. Maybe it was because they didn't like Hillary. Maybe it was because they thought an outsider would shake things up, or maybe he would deliver on the promises that he made. And he certainly made a lot of promises. Now Tim is saying, we are having zero pushback whatsoever with Joe Biden as our endorsed candidate. We are definitely going to move the dial in the terms of non-college voters that voted for Trump moving over to the Biden column. That's what he said recently on CNN. So I'm sure he'll bring that message to the show today, making a difference at the polls. Kelly Dickey will be joining us later in the show. Kelly is a mail handler, Local 322, worked for the Postal Service as a mail handler for 22 years, starting as a shop steward and president for the last 6 years. I'm going to talk about the unions that make up the Postal Service. There's actually four of them. And the mail handlers are part of our presenting sponsor, LIUNA, Laborers International. The website for the postal workers, by the way, the mail handlers, that is npmhu.org. They are recognized as the exclusive collective bargaining agent for 47,000 mail handlers employed by the Postal Service. And 8 years ago, in 2012, the Mail Handlers Union reached their centennial mark, celebrating 100 years of service as a key union within the postal communities. They are an essential part of the mail processing and distribution network utilized by the Postal Service to move more than 165 billion pieces of mail every year. They work in all the nation's large postal plants throughout the 50 states and Puerto Rico, where mail handlers are responsible for loading and unloading trucks, transporting mail within the facility, both manually and using industrial equipment like forklifts, preparing, sorting, containerizing the mail for distribution and delivery, and operating a host of machinery and automated equipment. There's a lot. There's a lot there. So we'll talk about what they do. And right now, there has been, as you know, by listening to this show and various other shows, there's been attacks on the Postal Service. getting rid of some mailboxes around, sorting machines. We've heard a lot of stories. Kelly's going to spell out what's been going on at the Postal Service and the financial problems. And this is another issue, too. Back in 2006, when Bush was president, George W. Bush, they decided that the Postal Service needed to pre-fund health care obligations 75 years into the future. What? Who came up with that idea? And as a result, the Postal Service is in dire straits financially. Right there, you're talking like $5 billion a year. You imagine any company that would have to do that. Say you work in XYZ company and the CEO of that company will have to fund your health care obligations and all the benefits that go with that for the next 75 years. This being 2020, we're talking 2095. No business can do that, but they put that burden on the Postal Service, and Kelly's going to talk about that. All right, what will happen if Trump wins? Well, unions are discussing plans, and the bottom line is some are considering a general strike. Steve Greenhouse writes in The Guardian that local labor federations in Seattle, Western Massachusetts, and Rochester, New York have all endorsed consideration of a general strike if Trump tries to subvert the outcome. That's number one. Labor leaders who support the resolution say they are intended to promote discussion and prepare unions for how to respond to Trump's actions after the election. Now, the last general strike in the United States, you have to go back to 1946, and it was limited to Oakland, California. Nonetheless, the idea has gained some traction in recent years. It's like when the Association of Flight Attendants and their president, Sarah Nelson, encouraged a general strike as a way to end the December 2018 government shutdown. You may recall that. That was ugly. It went on for like 35, 36 days. And Sarah was the one that pretty much said, all right, planes aren't going to fly. Then all of a sudden, Trump said, okay, I get it. Other labor leaders worry the concept is more of a slogan than a sound strategy. Proponents of the conversation acknowledge that as a general matter, organized labor is not currently in a very strong position to call for a unilateral general strike, but they suggest that circumstances often change quickly in moments of a political crisis. But there's all kind of indications. Trump has already got his lawyers ready to challenge whatever comes out of the election today, because it could be a boost in the popular vote, the electoral vote. Who knows? He's been saying that the mail-in ballots are fraudulent, so he's already set the stage for all of this. Meanwhile, union members in Florida are making a final push to get out the vote for Joe Biden. The unions are attempting to reach infrequent voters who are registered but have yet to cast a ballot in a state where 7.8 million people have already voted. You know, nationally, it's like 100 million people that have already voted. Now, polls show Biden and Trump pretty much tied. Most of the 34,000 Florida workers represented by Unite Here were laid off in March. Now, about 300 of them are working as full-time paid canvassers and 500 as volunteers to reach over 100,000 low-propensity voters. The SEIU, service employees, they spent $150 million to reach minority voters in Florida. And its canvassers have knocked on, you ready for this, 519,000 doors in the middle of a pandemic. It's not stopping them. Now, in addition to voting for Biden, the unions are also encouraging people in Florida to vote yes on Amendment 2, the state's ballot proposition that would raise the minimum wage to $15 per hour. Now, that's going to bring out a lot of young voters, because there's a lot of young voters working in places where they are well below the minimum wage, well below the minimum wage. So obviously, once again, Florida is one to watch. And from what I've been gathering, their stats will come down relatively quickly tonight. Across the country, members of the United Food and Commercial Workers, UFCW, are building union strength this season, this election season. Members throughout the country have been mobilized to get out the vote and help make sure members' voices are heard at the polls. Got a comment here from Debbie Whipple. She works for a Kroger grocery store. This is in Fayetteville, Georgia, another state that's in play. She said reaching out to fellow members to engage in meaningful dialogue around voting and the things that matter to them this year has been empowering. With each call, being able to gather and share information about the candidates this year and offer assistance with voter registration, early voting requirements, voting dates to remember, and mail-in voting allows me to have a finger on the pulse of our union's voices. Turns out that members in Ohio, Kentucky, Kansas, and Arizona were also brought in on this, and they've been activated as well. So certainly lots of good news there. One more here before we break, and this is from a CWA leader, Local 1298, Dave Weidlich. That local covers Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. And he writes what's at stake for workers in this election. Local 1298, the Communication Workers, is an organization that's all about labor and promoting and fighting for issues that are in the best interests of our great organization. Labor unions are under attack by corporate America and individuals who do not believe in organizing and collective bargaining. Well, guess what? Unions built the foundation for the middle class. Our predecessors fought hard and in some cases lost their lives for our right to organize and collectively bargain. Today, we're faced with constant attacks from lawmakers and the wealthiest people in America. The CWA triangle represents organizing, community, and political action, as well as bargaining and representation. The reason we engage our members politically is to fight these attacks by electing candidates who fight for our rights and who do not create laws to hurt our cause. We have one of the best collective bargaining agreements in our industry, and we will fight to keep it that way. We achieved our contract with the help of candidates who stood with us and by electing candidates that pledged to support the sisters and brothers of our union to preserve our rights, not take them away. I respect opinions that are different on both sides of any argument if they are respectful and not filled with hate and divisiveness. We are a family of union members working for the betterment of our organization. Hats off to Dave Weidlich, Local 1298, Communication Workers of America. National Union is one of the many proud sponsors of this show. Again, that union represents workers in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Coming up next, Tim Berga of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget we're available on various platforms, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and when you get a chance, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated. We also appreciate our sponsors. This next segment brought to you on behalf of the United Labor Agency, they connect people with employment, 216-666-2185. You can find them online at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, a man who has been very, very hard at work, mobilizing union brothers and sisters, getting them to the polls, making sure that we make a difference in... So many cases, so many races. Ay, 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 ay. Tim Berger, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I tell you, the day is finally here. I don't know what else you could have done. I mean, Tim, you and I have been talking about this election for practically a year now, I think. We didn't know who the candidate was going to be until a couple of months ago when Joe Biden surfaced. But just want to ask you, starting right off, how do you feel?
Well, I feel good that Ohioans are engaged. Early vote turnout has been extremely high. I believe turnout today at the polls is going to be high. And we have very clear differences between, you know, the candidates that are running. And we were very thorough and methodical about this endorsement. And it's a united labor movement for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket. And it struck me as I was thinking about this today, and you're right, it's been a long campaign season, but Donald Trump spent 4 years just worrying about his reelection and playing politics. He filed his reelection papers the day after he was sworn in on the inauguration, January 20th of 2017. And you can't govern simply by playing politics all the time. So he has a record to run on now, and that's what we've been showing our members and working people in the state of Ohio. And when you look at the record, he's not delivered for us, not delivered the jobs he's promised. He certainly hasn't gotten us. He's botched the pandemic and how he's handled it. And as a result, it's made matters worse. And here we are with the economic situation we're dealing with. So change needs to happen, and it's up to the voters now to determine whether that will be the case.
Now, Tim, as you know, 4 years ago, Trump did get a lot of union support, and I think a lot of that had to do with NAFTA. He said he was going to get rid of NAFTA, and yeah, we did see the end of NAFTA on his watch. It wasn't the plan that labor actually wanted. Labor made it better because there were enforcement protocols that needed to be put in place. But just wondering, compared to 4 years ago, I know you do a lot of traveling around the state of Ohio, which is very much in play right now. What are you hearing? What's the pulse?
Yeah, it is different than 4 years ago. And you're right, too many working people and too many union members voted for Donald Trump in 2016, maybe because they didn't like Hillary Clinton, maybe because they thought that we needed an outsider to shake up the system, so to speak, or maybe that even Trump would deliver on some of the promises that he was making. But 4 years later now, we have to point out the facts. We have to look at the record. Where's the infrastructure bill that he's been promising for 4 years? And we have bipartisan support in Congress to move a massive infrastructure bill. Where is his health care plans that he keeps talking about? He wants to get rid of the Affordable Care Act and replace it with something beautiful. Where is that? What is that? What has he done in terms of manufacturing and trade? Our import-export deficit is greater now than when Donald Trump took office 4 years ago. China is the leading importer of goods and products into this country and into the state of Ohio, and it's gotten worse. Where are the manufacturing jobs? He told the good workers of Lordstown, don't sell your home. The jobs are going to come flooding back. General Motors picks up, moves to Mexico, rewarded with a Trump tax break and stock buybacks. One disappointment and failure and broken promise after the other. We have less manufacturing jobs in this country now by 230,000 than we had 4 years ago. And all of this was trending this way prior to the pandemic, and because of Trump's mishandling of the pandemic, it's made matters worse, and we need a change.
As you know, Mitch McConnell is now saying that any stimulus package, well, he first said it was going to happen after the election. Now we'll be lucky if we see anything then, maybe the first of the year with a new Congress. I don't know. But he didn't waste any time trying to get a Supreme Court nominee in there. Just wondering how that's weighing on the voters. I mean, there's a lot of people that are hurting right now. They could use some unemployment checks, some stimulus money. What are you hearing about that, especially in the state of Ohio?
It's disgraceful. You know, we should recognize the heroic effort our essential and frontline workers are doing here in the state and have been for the last 9 months, helping us get through this pandemic, delivering for us, and Mitch McConnell, Donald Trump not delivering for those frontline workers and essential workers. So, you know, people are struggling, people are hurting. We need help, we need assistance. And the reality of it is that Donald Trump really doesn't care. Mitch McConnell was more interested in trying to play politics and put a rush through a Supreme Court nominating process, as you'd indicated. 5 months, the HEROES Act has been sitting, passed by the U.S. House of Representatives, sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk. So change also needs to happen in the U.S. Senate. We need the Democrats there to get control and work with the president, work with the House of Representatives, and have an agenda that helps working people and regular Ohioans to move forward. And it's long overdue, and we're hopeful that the American people and the Ohioans that get out there and vote are going to bring about that necessary change.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be any changes? Let's talk a little bit more about that in the House of Representatives. And then you mentioned the Senate. You know what my fear is? Biden gets in and the Senate is still Republican. And it just reminds me of when the Republicans were in charge in the second term with Obama. Nothing could get done. He's done such a good job of blocking good legislation. Is that a concern to you, Tim?
It's a major concern. Folks who look at this stuff for a living are saying that it's about a 50-50 shot that the Senate could flip back to the Democrats. I certainly hope that it happens. There's a number of key races around the country that everybody's looking at for that regard. So you're right. We've got major work that needs to get done on behalf of the American people to get this economy moving again, to bring us together, to heal the country, and really deal with the issues that matter most to people. And it just hasn't happened. What we've seen is just 4 years of politics, and politics of the worst kind that our president really has been enabling and promulgating. So a lot's at stake, but I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic in the American people that they're going to make this correction and we can get the country moving again.
You mentioned like 100 million people have already voted. I don't know what the numbers are in the state of Ohio, but it seems to be across the board that a lot of people have voted. And just wondering if you can read into that, what does that mean? I mean, obviously the pandemic played into all that. What's your thoughts?
Well, over 3 million Ohioans have already cast a ballot. So, Democrats may have a little bit of edge going into Election Day, but I do believe it's going to be extremely high turnout, most likely break records in the state of Ohio for turnout, which is a good thing. We want people to get out there and express the right to vote. We want to make sure that all votes are counted. We want to be patient in making sure that it's done accurately and thoroughly.
Right.
So, right now, Ohio is, if you believe those that look at this for a living, that Ohio is a toss-up state. And, we're optimistic that change is coming and Ohioans are on the front end of that.
One more issue here in the state of Ohio's Supreme Court. And there is an opportunity for the first time, I believe, in a really long time, that it could switch to the Democratic side. We've got two Democratic candidates, and two of them won 2 years ago, and much to the surprise of the Chamber of Commerce, which funds these races. that would be a game changer, wouldn't it, Tim?
Well, it's extremely important. That's why we're backing Jennifer Bruner and John O'Donnell for Ohio Supreme Court to end the era of rigged legislative map drawing. in Ohio, the voters roughly vote half, 50% for Democrat legislators and 50% Republican legislators. But because of the way the map is gerrymandered, the Republicans control two-thirds and three-fourths of the state legislative seats and congressional seats. That's not right. That has to change. And the new map drawing process will begin at the first of the year. And any disputes over the legality of the map drawing process will land at the Ohio Supreme Court. And that's why we need Bruner and O'Donnell in there to make sure that the law is followed correctly and we have fair districts and fair maps. That'll end the era of rigged legislative districts and have better representation for the people.
Yeah, the Republicans did a really good job on that 10 years ago, and that's why they've been able to remain in power. So
found illegal.
Was it?
They did a really good job of drawing those maps illegally, and a Republican courts have said that, and then it got bumped up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they said, well, let's just let this play out. So that's what's at stake here.
Yeah, yeah. We always say this is probably one of the most important elections in a long time, and there's so many things at stake right now from the White House on down. So it'll be interesting to watch. You take care, my friend. Hopefully next time we talk, we'll dissect all of this, and we'll move forward with a new administration. How's that sound?
Well, America's Workforce Radio and your program is so instrumental in getting the real information out there and the facts out there that matter to working people. And I'm just so pleased that you're doing this and that you have us on.
We're trying there, buddy. You take care, keep up the fight, and stay safe, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Tim Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. You can find them online at ohioaflcio.com. All right, we're going to take a quick break when we come back. Kelly Dickey, on behalf of the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, Local 322, talk about what the mail handlers are doing right in the middle of a pandemic and a major election. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Follow us on Twitter at AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to our next guest, just want to read a statement briefly here from Rich Trumka. Rich is president of the AFL-CIO, and he talked about making a difference on this monumental day, Election Day. He writes, as union members, we come together and rise to the challenge when our communities need us. And right now, nothing is more important to the future of the labor movement and working families and our communities than voting. As we rise to meet the challenges COVID-19 presents to our nation, and especially to working people, we know that making sure every vote is counted will be critical to making sure workers' voices are heard and that our values win. Americans already are voting in record numbers by mail and in person to select the next president and vice president of the United States. This is something we've counted on for more than 200 years, but some people are threatening to subvert and circumvent our democratic institutions. They want to silence and intimidate eligible voters and prevent our votes from being counted. Will you take the pledge to join workers in defending our democratic republic? Will you help ensure that every vote is counted? Since the United States was founded, working people have fought to make our nation a democracy, and America's working people are determined to defend it. It's really important. That is a great message from Rich, because voter intimidation is not only a state crime, but a federal crime. So you're voting today, and anybody is like hovering around you, telling you who to vote for, report that person. It is illegal to do that. All right, let's go to our live line right now and join a newcomer to the show. Kelly Dickey is her name, and she is the president of Mail Handlers, the Mail Handlers Union, Local 322. Which is, it's based in Pittsburgh, and you cover a big chunk of western Pennsylvania. Is that correct, Kelly?
That's correct, sir. Most of western Pennsylvania.
Good. Well, let's start with getting involved in the unions. You've been there. You started as a mail handler, I see, like 22 years ago, then became a shop steward. What got you involved in the Mail Handlers Union? Any union history in your family?
Well, yes, coming from Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's traditionally known as a union town. So my family members were all, you know, proud union members, boilermakers, insulators, whatnot. So it's kind of inbred in our family that unions are important. So when I joined the post office 22 years ago, right at orientation, we had a presentation from the union, and I immediately signed up. Like I said, about 2 years later, I have a couple college degrees, and not that mail handler work is mundane, but I wanted to try to use some of what I learned in college in my work, which is kind of hard because, again, it's a physical job, not necessarily a mental job. So that piqued my interest in the union itself, and therefore I signed up and became a shop steward. Started reading the contracts and everything else, representing our members, was a union steward for most of my career. Then I got elected to be a branch president, which is a president of a postal plant. They're representing everyone in that plant. And then about 6 years ago, I was elected to be the local president of the entire local in this area.
Okay. And you got how many members in Local 322?
We're just about at 900 members now.
Good. And I'm reading overall there's like 47,000 mail handlers in the United States, according to your website, which is npmhu.org. We should point out, too, that the mail handlers are affiliated with the Laborers International Union. And Laborers, by the way, they're the presenting sponsor of America's Workforce. I just wanted to throw that out there. So that's cool. But there's actually, what, four unions in the Postal Service? You're one of four, correct?
That's correct. We have four postal unions because there's traditionally four different types of postal workers or groups. One is called the American Postal Workers Union, APWU. They represent primarily clerks, and for the public, those are usually the people that you go into the post office and buy stamps from or drop your mail off to. Although there are clerks that also work in the bigger plants processing mail, more on a smaller level, like on a piecewise level. But the APWU also represents the maintenance workers, the truck drivers, and the custodians in the various postal facilities. In addition to that, we have the National Association of Letter Carriers, NELC. They are the mailmen or the postal deliveries. The NALC represents postal carriers, mainly inner city or in the bigger cities. And then we have the National Rural Letter Carriers Association, the NRLCA. They represent the rural carriers. Those are the ones that deliver mail more in the like outer suburbs and in the country and whatnot. And then, like you said, finally we have the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, mail handlers such as myself. We are the workers that work inside of the postal facilities. The public never sees us, but we are the labor force of the Postal Service. We're loading trucks, unloading trucks, moving mail across the plant, you know, separating mail in bulk, packages in bulk, and whatnot. So those are the four unions.
All right, talk to me about what's happened here in the last, my gosh, it seemed maybe 5, 6, 7 months, because Trump has done everything possible to, well, he claims he's modernizing the Postal Service, and then that's kind of scary in itself. And I'm hearing that some machines were left outside to rust, sorting machines. I'd like to get your point of view. I mean, you're right in the middle of all this. What's changed here, Kelly?
Well, a big thing that changed, okay, obviously we are also federal workers. So as federal workers, a lot of what happens to us is determined at the federal level by Congress, and more particularly by what they call the Postal Board of Governors. The Postal Board of Governors is an agent, federal agency that kind of regulates what we do and what we do not do. When Trump took office, I believe at that point in time, 4 years ago, there was only two people out of the possible, I think, eight that could be on this board. And without at least a majority, or at least a quorum, they call it, like of at least four or more, there isn't much decision-making that could be done. So as most presidents do, Trump, of course, started appointing governors to this board. Obviously, they're very pro-Trump and conservative, which is unfortunate for us. A couple years into it, the postmaster at the time was Megan Brennan. Again, I can't speak for Megan, but for whatever reason, a couple years into it, she decided she's retiring, she's getting out of town. So a new postmaster was designated a few months ago. His name is Louis DeJoy. Come to find out that Mr. DeJoy is a very staunch reporter of President Trump, donating millions of dollars to his campaigns. In addition to that, DeJoy retired from a company called XPO, which had changed names over the years, but basically had been a competitor of the United States Postal Service. What XPO did was the post office would subcontract work out to them in the form of transportation, and XPO also sells machinery and robots to the Postal Service. Now, why that's still important is that although DeJoy left that company and became the Postmaster General, he still owns a lot of stock in that company. So decisions he is making for the Postal Service could basically line his pockets in half. We've already found out that he just did a $5 million contract with his former company, XPO, in the Postal Service. So that's definitely a problem. But to continue more so than that, the decisions that Postmaster DeJoy made as soon as he got his bearings, you know, knew what he was doing, he immediately started making cuts, such as what you spoke to, getting rid of machinery, claiming that it's unnecessary, it's unneeded, you know, it's excess, the mail volume is down, we need to start saving money. In addition to that, removing the blue mailboxes that we see, you know, throughout where we drop mail off and things of that nature. Now, the problem was, is one, this guy has never been a postal worker. He's only just got the position, and he's making major decisions, and he's not consulting with the proper authorities. There's also the Postal Regulatory Committee, PRC, which they're supposed to report to in, you know, before they make major changes, and he did not do that. Again, anybody can speculate as to why, but you got an election year, a presidential election year at that. And with Christmas coming right up behind that, and you're a brand new person that doesn't know one thing from the other, why would you do that type of thing unless it was to impede the mail and impede people voting and whatnot? At least that's what we think it was.
Kelly, wasn't he taking court on some of these things? And from what I understand, the courts ruled in the workers' favor on that. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. In fact, first he was pulled in front of Congress to actually speak to what he was doing under oath. But then, yes, individually, several states, including the state of Pennsylvania, sued against what was being done and won that suit. So what the suit, I believe, decided to do, he was immediately to stop dismantling postal machinery and had to put in the machinery that, if possible, that he could, and put it back into the postal facilities. Another big thing that he came in, there was a memo that came out, so this is actual documented evidence from him, out to the different postal management team, telling them that, okay, this is the way we're going to do things now. One, cut the overtime. We don't want any overtime. Two, transportation. Cut the trucks. In other words, if that mail, what happened? Let me backtrack a little bit. In mailing, obviously, in life, there's always things that pop up that you don't expect. So sometimes we are required by certain delivery standards. Mail has to be delivered in so much time, depending on the type of mail, when it was mailed, and whatnot. So if we're processing mail, let's say a machine temporarily breaks down, or there's an unexpected call off of more than what they anticipated, like workers to call off. Let me slow down that processing for that night. Now, granted, they can call in overtime, and they do. That's how they, one way that they fix that. They'll call in people for overtime because, again, they're committed to get this mail out. And very often, they'll hold a truck, which means the trucks stay scheduled to depart at 5 a.m. Well, they have to finish up that mail to get it to the station so it can be delivered for that day. So they may have a late truck, meaning, and it's only by 5 or 10 minutes. This is nothing drastic here, and it's very commonplace. Okay, hold that truck going to whatever city it's going to. We still got, we're almost finishing up the mail, so that truck may be held back 5 or 10 minutes. Nothing drastic, but again, Postmaster DeJoy gave the edict: no more overtime, no more late trips. There were trucks that left empty, and do leave empty. In other words, none of the mail was ready when it was time for that truck to depart to whatever city it's going to drop off the mail. And management is saying, you know what? Oh, well, cut the truck, go.
Oh, my.
Ridiculous. Jeez. Ridiculous. So these are some of the things also that both that the state sued and said he had to stop, and it was ruled that he has to stop that practice. He claims that he would do that, obviously. He's legally required to do so, but his statement stated only until the election is over. So we fear that this is all going to come back once this election's over, which is bad for everyone.
Yeah, no doubt. Kelly, I got to take a break. Can you stay with us for another segment here on America's Workforce?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Good stuff. Yeah, I love the conversation here. Kelly Dickey is her name. She is president of Local 322 out of Pittsburgh, covers a big chunk of Western Pennsylvania, has about 900 members. And we'll continue the conversation, talk about the election, of course. Pennsylvania, a bellwether state, a key state in this national discussion that we're having right now. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
Lyuna, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong, we're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Kelly Dickey. Kelly is with the Mail Handlers Union, Local 322. You might want to check out their national website. Lots of good information posted there. npmhu.org. They're one of the four unions that make up the postal service. You got the postal workers, the letter carriers, that's the mailmen and mailwomen, and the rural letter carriers, and then you got the mail handlers. You don't see the mail handlers. They're behind the scenes doing all the heavy lifting, so to speak, and there's a 47,000 mail handlers in the country. Mail handlers also affiliated with the Laborers International Union, which is the presenting sponsor of America's Workforce. A lot of information there I wanted to get out. We're hearing so much about this election, hearing a whole lot about Pennsylvania. Maybe you could speak to what's going on there. The ballots have to be, what, postmarked by 8 p.m. tonight there in order to be counted? Is that the latest ruling in Pennsylvania?
At least for Allegheny County, yes. So the post office, please note, the current administration is putting out a lot of negative stuff about the post office. And I can assure you, I'm a 22-year postal worker. Those are absolute lies. Every election year, but especially because of the current media and the current things that are being putting out by the current administration, specifically this year, we have practices and procedures in place to deal with election mail and ballots. Like I said, every election, these procedures are instituted, but especially now because we are so much in the limelight, so to speak, with everything that's going on. So when there's an election, everybody from the top of the post office management team down to the workers such as myself, everybody knows that it's election time. So procedures that are put into place start with, first of all, talk. So management, every day at the time clocks, when workers are hitting on, getting ready to start their shifts, they're reminded, be on the lookout. Make sure you capture and process and get it ready to deliver all election mail, especially ballots. Every supervisor and or manager does sweeps, which is a walkthrough of the area that they're supervising over to make sure nothing's been missed, nothing's been overlooked, nothing is, missing. And this is done, like I said, around the clock. The plants process mail 24 hours a day, so three shifts basically, and this is done constantly and completely through the entire election season. In addition to that, for instance, there's an edict that goes out to the carriers, although I'm not a carrier, but I get this type of information, that now for these couple days going up into today, the election day, usually a mail carrier, if he doesn't have mail for your house, he can bypass and just go to the next house. Saves him time, saves money, saves all that. Well, they all have been, and they do this every election, but again, specifically this time around, they are being told, you stop at every house, whether you have mail for that house or not, because there might be a chance that the homeowner or the resident has a ballot outgoing that needs to be picked up. So when I say that they turn the plants and the post offices upside down, they literally do every single day, every single minute, to make sure that everything is getting processed and put forth in a timely fashion. There's no question about this.
None of it.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear, especially what you indicated coming out of the White House. But at this time, I mean, it seems like every other word is a lie, so it's hard to believe anything that this president says anymore. But it's good to hear from you, from the workers' perspective, especially on behalf of the mail handlers dealing with this. Yes. Because when you throw that doubt out there, people start saying, oh, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. You know, the other issue, too, Kelly, is there's efforts to privatize the Postal Service, and it's almost like you're being set up to fail. And we have addressed this issue so many times on this show on how you have to pre-fund your benefits, your health care. What is it, 75 years into the future? And I always ask the question, what business on the planet Earth can do that kind of thing, right?
Exactly. None, and be able to survive. None at
right.
all. That was a 2006 Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act that required the post office to pre-fund its retiree health benefits 75 years into the future, meaning we have to pre-fund our retiree health benefits for workers that aren't even born yet. That's just ludicrous to think of.
Crazy. Crazy. Yeah. Now, haven't there been efforts to overturn that over the... I mean, that's been in effect for, 14 years? And it's still in effect. That's a part I don't understand. What's the problem here?
You know, I can give my personal opinion on it. Yes, we have been trying to overturn this probably since they enacted it, or very close to it. I think what happens is, and it often happens in Congress, where lawmakers tend to put too much into it. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yes, we need to get rid of this mandate, but then they get a little bit over, I don't know what you want to call it, over anxious, over whatever, and they want to add things. So now it's not just get rid of the pre-funding mandate, but let's also add in there that we're going to guarantee six-day delivery, we're going to not do cluster boxes, we're going to require all retirees to go into Medicare. They add all these things. So now this simple bill becomes a bill with all these parts to it. Now, the bigger the bill is, the more committees that have to approve it, and the harder it is to get everybody on the same side to say yes. So I think for a long time, that was why we could never get anything passed, because it would snowball into this huge bill that had so many variables to it that not everybody could agree on all the variables.
Right.
Well, recently, they have slimmed it down, and we've gotten a lot further than we have in the past, but we're still not there yet. So hopefully after this election, everybody gets, in there, we can get it done. But please mind that, the listeners, we don't collect any tax dollars, zero tax dollars. The post office is self-funded through the sale of postage. So with that being said, we have to be self-sufficient, but we're also a nonprofit, so we can't make any money. Now, give credit where it's due. In 2006, the reason that this act was put into play was because at that time, the post office was making a lot of money, okay? And the government thought, we got two decisions. They can't make money. So what are we going to do? We can either cut rates, or we can keep the rates where they are and take all this extra money that the post office is making and find a way to hang on to it without showing a profit. And I believe that that's why this act was put into place. But what they didn't foresee is the huge downfall with the internet and electronic billing, and and that hit the post office hard as far as first class mail goes. People are paying their bills online or over the phone. No more first class. It dropped considerably, and with that went all that money that was coming in. But then they never went back to fix this pre-funding mandate, because now we're not making that money anymore, so we can no longer afford to do this. So that's my spin on it, at least.
There you go. Kelly, I love talking to you. Let's do this again. Give it a couple of months and let things sort out. No pun intended. I want to drive everybody to the national website, npmhu.org. You keep up the fight over there in Pittsburgh, and hopefully we'll have a discussion on a new administration next time, and make sure we get some money going to the Postal Service and have it managed the right way. How's that sound?
That sounds fantastic. Thank you. I'm an honor to be a guest, and I'm willing to speak to you and your listeners at any time.
Thank you. You take care and be safe.
You too.
Kelly Dickey, president of Local 322 of the National Mail Handlers Union. Well, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we're going to hear from the iron workers and the laborers organizing at Vanderbilt University. They got a fight on their hands down there. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.